Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the No Way Podcast. Today's special guest is the bright, shining light that is Shannon Chan Kent. Shannon is best known for her extensive voiceover work with My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Cornagast, the animated series Superbook, and Polly Pocket, and like a thousand other animated shows, she is just so talented. You can also see her on-screen work in Hulu's Woke, Freeform's Good Trouble, and CW's Life Sentence. Keep a look out for Shannon later this year in season 3 of Netflix's hit series You and season 2 of Another Life. That one's also on Netflix. Now, let's go to the movies. Shannon.
Hi.
How are you doing? Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I am so sorry I messed up the time. I was like, I am not unprofessional, Mark Ian.
I am so glad you rescheduled because for those listening, we originally were going to record this actually about a week or so ago, and it was so hot. I pushed to like delay it because I was like, this is going to be the sweatiest episode of the podcast ever. I am much more temperature controlled right now. I'm dry. I'm excited.
We all thank you for that, actually. Okay. Yes. So thank you for...
Good. Yeah. No problem.
Not me, though. I did think you were less of a professional, and it has lowered my opinion of you, so...
Okay. All right. Well, I'm ready. I'm prepared. I'm not really prepared, but we're going to just wing this.
Okay. This is not looking good for you. Okay.
Shannon, thanks so much for being here. Really, really excited to have you on. You are down in beautiful Los Angeles. How are you liking it down there?
I love it. Do I like being totally unemployed down here? No. Not that I'm totally unemployed, but it's like every time I've come down here, I've come down for a project. So it's been really great. And now I'm in that, you know, phase where do I like this city anymore? But.
So it's, yeah. It's good if you're working. If you're not, it's nobody likes it.
Well, I'm like, you know, could I be at home with friends and family and also be unemployed? You know what I mean?
Every town sucks if you don't have a job. So
fair enough.
Yes.
Yeah. I consider moving every time I'm not presently working, wherever I am. I could be on vacation. I'm like, I'm not employed here. Fuck this place.
Has your agent tried to get you on Desperate Housewives yet? Because that's a viable option for everybody.
Isn't that over? Is that a show still?
No, you mean Real Housewives.
Oh, sorry.
Markian has his own show. It's called Real Desperate Housewives.
I meant Real Housewives.
Markian's wondering if you've had any auditions for Lost recently. He's just heard about this great show.
Well, oh my God.
Desperate Housewives?
Did you
watch that, Markian? Or did your parents watch it?
I was going to say.
Eva Longoria, you guys. Yes. Of course. Come
Markian,
on.
Markian, I feel like you could have been the pool boy that Eva Longoria, doesn't she like
I could have been.
Do you remember that actor? What's his name? Jesse.
Was it Metcalf? No.
Yes. He's in Chesapeake Shores now, filmed on the island.
I watched a little bit of Real Desperate Housewives myself. Only if they're real desperate.
Not the desperate ones, the real Desperate Housewives. I remember watching it just because it was like a big thing, but I was like very intrigued. I was in that weird part of being a boy teenager that you're like, something's happening in this show.
And so did you just describe a stage of your life as
boy teenager?
Most people go from boy to teenager, but I like the fact that you had a phase called boy teenager.
You know what I'm... A boy teenager?
What do you consider yourself right now?
Wouldn't you call yourself a tween? Is that a boy teenager?
Okay. Oh, we're getting technical here. No. We're getting...
Shannon.
With our...
Shannon, do you consider yourself a woman now or a girl woman?
I think I'm still a girl woman.
Yeah. I think that's with actors a little bit. We're always kind of one foot in childhood the whole time.
I think so, but I think it's necessary to do what we have to do.
Oh my God, I'm such a boy man.
Such a boy man.
That sounds bad.
Oh no. We got it on tape now.
we all know each other, right? Am I correct in saying that? We all are familiar with each other.
Yes.
Great.
I mean, Kayvon and I haven't spent too much time together.
No,
but,
I was going to say, gravitational circles, you know, it always feels like you know people. But yeah, I was going to say, this is probably we'll end up being the longest we end up chatting and hanging. So I'm very excited.
So for our listeners out there, Shannon has an illustrious career on film and television. But before that, and kind of during that, she was also a superstar here in Vancouver for the theater scene, which Mike, Kayvon, and I all come from. So that's how we all kind of know each other, is through the tight-knit theater scene here in Vancouver.
Pool boy tight community.
Little boy.
You know, the boy teenager theater scene.
It's as tight as a pool boy, this community.
Let's get down to it. What movie have you brought to us today?
I have brought you the Lindsay Lohan version of The Parent Trap.
No way.
I feel like I obviously saw it in the theaters. I think I was just at, I can't remember what, I think Lindsay Lohan's like a year older than me, so I must have seen it. Probably relatively too close to her age, so maybe she was like 11 in it or something. I just remember being like, the music is amazing, her hair is amazing, like everything she was wearing at the time felt like so on trend, and I feel like I was just at that really impressionable age where I was like, oh, she's got the side bang thing, ooh, I want that, oh, she's wearing this, I want that. And it, oh, obviously the story and the movie was great, but I just feel like it was a perfect storm of casting and the world that they created. I also love Nancy Meyers, so.
Why is everyone staring? Don't you see it? See what? The resemblance between us.
Are we kind of all in agreement that Lindsay Lohan is so fucking great in this movie?
Yes.
Sure.
Kayvon. I heard a little from Kayvon.
Well, I mean, should have got the Academy and she got robbed sort of pitch on.
She should have got two Academies.
Kind of, Kayvon, yeah.
She might have peaked at Parent Trap, but I think she's did an incredible job.
She's great. Yeah. She's great.
Kayvon, do you think you could have done that when you were her age?
I'd like to do it now and see how it just sounds.
I'd love to see you just openly play a child.
36-year-old Kayvon at camp with a bunch of 8-year-olds finding his mirror image.
The Kayvon trap?
The Kayvon trap.
I think I'm in that trap.
Yeah. You never get nobody.
No.
Uh-oh. Yes.
The Parent Trap was released on July 29th, 1998. It runs for 128 minutes. It's written by David Swift, based on the book by Eric Kastner. It is directed by Nancy Meyers, and it is actually her feature film debut, The Parent Trap is, which is very impressive. It is produced by Disney Pictures, and its budget is an estimated $15 million, and it did $92 million worldwide. So very successful movie at the time in 1998. I'm very jealous, Shannon, that you saw this in theaters. I hope they do a re-release sometime, because I would be going to it. This is obviously, for anybody who doesn't know, it's a remake of the 1961 movie starring Hayley Mills as the girl, the trap, not the parent.
Don't call her a trap. She's not the trap.
Oh, excuse me.
You boy man.
You know, I may never be alone with you again.
The Parent Trap stars, of course, Lindsay Lohan as twins Hallie Parker and Annie James. It is also her feature film debut. This was her first role ever, which is insane, because it should have won an Oscar, Kayvon. It stars Dennis Quaid as Nick Parker, Natasha Richardson as Elizabeth James, Elaine Hendricks as Meredith Blake, Lisa Ann Walter as Chessie, and Simon Kunz as Martin.
I'd say it's safe to serve the fishy swans.
When two preteens named Hallie and Annie meet through their summer camp, their two lives are rattled when they realize that they are identical twins. With parents, British mother, aka famous dress designer Elizabeth, and American father, a winemaker named Nick, living in two different sides of the world, the girls decide to make an identity swap in hopes of spending time with their other parent. The girls later choose to inform their guardians of the swap while at a hotel in San Francisco, which later reunites the divorced pair and sends them back into remarriage with each other.
Except you don't have to cry hysterically.
Oh, yes, I do.
Here's the reviews for The Parent Trap. It has 86% on Tomato Meter, pretty good. And it has 3 stars from Roger Ebert. And this is what he says. Lindsay Lohan plays her roles seamlessly. Although I was aware that special effects and over-the-shoulder doubles were being used, I simply stopped thinking about it because the illusion was so convincing. The Parent Trap is a splendid story premise, but in a way, the switch is just the setup, and the real story involves the parents. They're played by Dennis Quaid and Natasha Richardson, who bring such humor and warmth to a movie that I was amazed to find myself actually caring about their romance.
Well, gosh, there you are. What do you know?
I went down a rabbit hole because of your movie choice, and the big conversation, obviously, around this movie is twins.
We're like twins.
I'm going to bring a couple stories to share some real life extraordinary tales about twins to give us some context for this movie. Paula Bernstein and Elise Schein separated at birth, adopted by separate parents, and they found each other 35 years into their lives and looked back and found out they both edited their high school newspapers, both studied film at university and became writers, and they met in 2003. And they found out, this is pretty creepy actually, that they were a part of a controversial study on nurture versus nature. The cause of the separation was not told to the adopted parents, but a scientist ended up stashing the research in a Yale University archive, knowing that it would be scrutinized. But he was like watching them from afar to find out what it would look like if you separated twins and then observed them from afar. And this other one here is not as nefarious. But this is their famous James Arthur Springer and James Edward Lewis, adopted by different families and grew up apart. In 1979, at the age of 39, they were reunited after becoming involved with the Minnesota Twin Family Study. They found out they were both 6 feet tall, weighed 180 pounds. Both had been married twice. Even more incredibly, both of their first wives were named Linda and their second wives were named Betty. Their sons had the same names, James Allen and James
Weird.
Allen.
Weird.
Both had a dog named Toy growing up.
No, no.
Both were,
I don't like
both
twins
worked
anymore.
In law enforcement as
this
sheriff.
This is too spooky.
Both worked as sheriffs, both smoked Salems and drank Miller Lite beer. That could just be an American guy. And both bit their fingernails.
How did this twin talk get so spooky? This I am spooked. I am spooked.
This is so freaky.
Where did you find this? Not saying you made it up.
Why are you trying to freak like, our listeners out?
I'm also a great writer. I have some short stories available. So there's some context. I just thought it was an interesting element to bring up because this is an extraordinary tale about twins with some extraordinary elements in play. But we have some real life context. There are some extraordinary stories of twins' lives being very alike, even though they never met.
How weird is that? Extremely.
Okay, so Shannon, the next thing we want to do is, this is something we do called the elevator pitch. And essentially, what I want you to do is imagine that you're the one who's going to pitch The Parent Trap. And let's not say the remake, let's just say the idea of The Parent Trap.
Hi, gentlemen. You all look a little spooked right now.
We are.
Not quite sure why, but let me just turn those frowns upside down. Because have I got a movie for you. The Parent Trap is my idea, and it is about two identical twins separated at birth. These twins are gingers, but they don't have to be. It doesn't matter.
Too spooky.
I was just going to say, we won't go there.
We'll talk casting later.
Two identical twins separated at birth, each one raised by one of their biological parents, one in America and one on the magical shores of England. They devise a plan, an amazing, twistedly fun plan to switch places so that their parents will have to finally switch them back and they will fall in love and everyone can be together. I want viewers to walk out of this movie feeling like anything is possible, feeling like sky is the limit, no dreams can be crushed ever. I want them to feel warm and fuzzy.
Is this like a pro-twin movie or an anti-twin movie?
This is like a pro-twin movie. This is like two is better than one.
We just watched The Shining, so we're a little uncomfortable around the twin concept.
Oh.
Yeah. Come play with us forever.
Come play with us.
We are getting very close to going into the, the real challenge of the show, jumping into the parent trap and finding what three no ways we settled on for your choice. But before we go into that, we like to establish some givens, elements of this world and this film that we accept as a part of the universe that lives within and can't come into our no ways and are things that we won't challenge. The really big one is pretty obvious. These are super kids. There is a James Bond level ability at accents, learning physicalities, fencing, ability to lift beds onto roofs of cottages, able to set up like better than Kevin McAllister from Home Alone could imagine a house of horror. Super kids. These are really amazing, brilliant, hyper-intelligent, physically advanced specimens of human beings. And the second piece is also kind of a broad one, but it is that this is a story of wealth and privilege. There are things that are being pulled off in regards to housing, funding, flight, travel, all boat, yacht, dates. There's clearly money in play, and that's why these two girls with those families are able to pull off some of the things in their planning. So, super kids, wealth and privilege.
James Residence?
Let's play!
Round one.
All right, so I'm going to take it away with the first no way here. So far in the movie, what we've seen is that two identical characters, these twins, have arrived at a summer girls' camp. They have like different activities and things. And then this is a scene where Annie and Hallie face off in a fencing match during this scene. And the rest of the camp is going to see for the first time that they are identical. So let's watch that scene here.
Yeah, hey, ladies, it's time to break up this little love fest. Annie, Hallie, whoa.
My no way is that the camp, kind of as a whole, counselors, the other campers, that after this moment of discovering that these two campers are completely identical down to like a T, that no one then follows up to discover any reason why. The origin or the reason behind why these two campers who have never met are literally identical twins. That's the no way.
I feel very boring here, but I have to completely agree with you. I was always baffled, especially by the camp counselor, the fact that she was like, Annie, Hallie, Annie, oh, and then she was frazzled, and then bye-bye.
Hallie, Annie.
Bye, see you later. It's like nothing was ever talked about again.
It's kind of crazy to me, but like for me, I went to a camp growing up, and I remember the most mundane thing, if it was kind of out of the norm, was talked about for the rest of the week.
Totally.
I mean, I'll say this really quick. I went to a camp and there was a guy there who had fingerless gloves. He was really good at walking on his hands. That was like his thing. He had sex in a treehouse with a girl.
And I'm still good at that. Still really good at walking on my hands. Yeah.
I'm in the cave-on trap. I told you my whole goddamn life. But that is still talked about sometimes to this day by people who went to that camp. There's no fucking way that identical twins show up and everyone's like, cool, back to fencing class.
If I was a friend looking at that, I would be losing my mind.
Yeah.
I would be like, holy shit, you guys, what is this?
I'm gonna try. I'm hearing a very strong united.
Like we are pretty united in this one.
It's a real Greek chorus of no way going on here. But I'm gonna offer something now. I'm not standing too strong on this, but I'm trying to put myself in the position. I'm gonna leave the kids aside. Maybe they're just all a bunch of dumb kids that can't process things. But let's talk about the powers that be at the camp. The counselors, the whoever's running it, mom and daughter seem to be the powers. It seems to be two women running a camp of about 180 people with weapons. But anyways,
yeah, that's
enough. There seems to be nobody else that works there. But they see these kids and they're not getting along, but they're clearly identical. So I'm going, okay, that's weird. I go back to the office and I get their files because they would have files. They'd have the medical report. I need to know if they have allergies. I have emergency contact for families. I know their I know what the situation is. And as soon as
Same allergies.
Yeah.
Strawberries.
Because they're gingers. And so they look at the files and same allergy, but different family names. No connection to family name. There's nothing. Like, I see it being sticky to pursue this any further. That, like, I don't know if this is really my place to start calling these families and exposing what might be a rather large family secret, and that might be way out of the purview of a camp counselor. And these are wealthy families, they're privileged families, so there's also that sense of, like, we don't fuck with the rich. So I don't know. I'm just thinking maybe we don't see the scene where they go back and look at their files, but I kind of buy that they might go, maybe we just leave this be. Like, obviously, they don't know for a reason, maybe.
I'm going to be a terrible guest on this show, like a Libra. Libra.
Are you waffling on us, Shannon?
I'm so easily swayed. I'm like, I could really argue that point. I do have to say, one of the first things that came to my mind was, is it the counselor's place to be like, well, let's call the parents and see why their children look alike? Like, it's not... Yes, I feel like it's a bit of personal. Yeah.
I feel you, because that call would basically be like, hey, we got a kid here that looks a lot like your kid.
Yes.
And they're like, okay. And they're like, that's all.
Exactly. Like, what do? You can't get involved and be like, did you split your children apart at birth? Like, it's just as the camp counselor, it's not your place.
Navajos!
So you're the camp counselor. You're a camp counselor at a camp, and you have this moment where you realize you've got two, what are they, 8, 9 years old? 11 maybe. Let's say
11.
You've got 2 11-year-olds who just discover each other, and you go, whoa, like, I'm looking at identical twins, and they're strangers. They have different family names. I looked at their files, all that sort of stuff, and they're fighting. They don't even want to admit that they're identical.
Right.
Do you have a conversation with them? What's your call?
I would not have a conversation with the parents. I mean, maybe when I feel like camp just started, so I wouldn't call the parents right away. I would actually take the girls aside and talk to them and see how they feel. I would say, what were their first impressions? How did you feel about what just happened?
Can I just quickly interject? And based on their reaction right there, at least one of them says, I don't know what you're talking about.
Resemblance between you and me?
Well, I would say that...
What do you mean? What do you mean? She doesn't look like me.
I would say her experience was the opposite. And you can't downplay someone's experience. So hear her out, right?
Don't you see it? See what?
I was just going to say, like, for me, that does make sense. Like, all of that talking about how a counselor and Shannon, the way you're, I think, dealing with that as a counselor is correct. You can maybe have a conversation, but past that, if they don't want to acknowledge it with each other, they don't want to talk about it, I can't, as an adult, really force them to be like, you're twins, look at each other, look, you look.
Yeah.
You know, I can't
stare
do that.
Stare into each other's
stare. Look, don't you see it? I see it. I'm not crazy.
In terms of acknowledgement, though, I do think that there does seem to be a consensus at the camp that they are identical because her friend refers to her as her clone.
I swear I heard your
evil clones needing all the way across the mess hall this morning.
So I think that they've like all kind of just accepted this reality that these two girls are identical, but no one's talking about it being family.
My no way is not so much, I think, with the counselors. It's sticking with the kids' reaction and the way that there's no scene, there's not one thing of a kid. We all know 11-year-olds. We all were one at one time.
Yeah, but these are rich kids. These kids deal with crazy, cool shit all the time because they're so fucking rich. So they're like seeing twins is not that exciting. There's also a boy at this camp that is never addressed. And he stays the entire time. So clearly there's a bit of a rule that like you don't address issues at the camp to the parents. The parents are rich. One of the rules is we drop our kids off. We don't get called until it's pickup day.
Well, and also, I do have to argue the fact that there are people out there that look like other people. I mean, these girls are obviously identical.
It's a great
but
statement.
I have to argue the fact that there are some people that look very much alike. And you can even be related to someone like my sibling and not look like them at all. In a weird way, I mean, they do look identical because they're played by the same actor, but could you buy it?
We have to buy that they look identical enough that their parents accepted it.
Right.
Yeah.
Good point.
They are indistinguishable.
I now see and feel that, like, I get that the kids kind of just roll with it after a while because these two obviously are also the stars of the camp. They're like the coolest kids there. They play poker. They're leading the feud. They just seem like the hot shots. And I think if the hot shot cool kid looked at their friends and said, "We don't look anything alike," the lemmings are going to go, "Oh yeah, I guess not." But I see the counselor can't go to the kids and go, "I have a hard thing to tell you that you probably were separated at birth." Not their place. So that's not going to happen. And they might also not call the parents through the 2 weeks because that's also, you know, robbing the kids of the experience and not an easy phone call to make. My last place where I have a hard time is at pickup day that someone doesn't say, "I feel like you should see this."
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, but also, I just realized, nobody picks those fucking girls up.
The butler does.
Yeah, the butler.
No, the butler never came back. Butler drops her off. Big one question I had for the whole film was, why didn't he come back again? There was just a limo with nobody in it for the British girl, and the other girl got on a bus.
Yeah. No. The butler comes back and picks her up, but it's Hallie.
Nope.
He meets her at the airport
in London.
Oh, yeah.
I remember going, why didn't he pick her up if he dropped
privilege,
her off?
Privilege.
Nobody well, picked. Okay, I'm done. I think it's I'm calling it away. It's away on my end. Okay. I think that the counselor might have thought, okay, when I see the people who pick them up on the last day, I can at least be able to go, I just think you should look over there and make your decision, but nobody picked them up. Way.
Okay, so you're away. This is Mike's point. I'm next because Shannon will get to decide this point here because I'm staying no way on it. And I'm staying no way for the sole fact that at the time of revealing the similarity and that they're identical twins, there is no reaction from the kids, and it's always pissed me off.
I have to agree with Markian. I'm going to say, I think it would have been a stretch to have it as a way. I definitely think it's a no way because I think if you were to actually have that happen in real life and have two identical people staring each other in the eyes, that there just wouldn't be way more of commotion. It's a no way.
No way!
I went to camp only once. I wasn't a camp kid. I wasn't like, I don't know if you did. You go to camp? Did you all go to camp a lot growing up?
I did every summer.
I only went once, and I had I ate all the Pepto-Bismol in the medical. It was a disaster. Oh, I got picked
was
up
on
early.
Purpose, or did you think it was like a candy, or why?
No, it was on purpose. I just had I had like separation anxiety from like my sisters.
And you thought Pepto-Bismol was?
Well, I would just get
indigestion, heartburn, diarrhea, separation anxiety.
People carry their anxiety in their tummies.
I always miss that part of the song.
It's true. It's true. That's exactly. True. And then my tongue. Did you know that Pepto turns your tongue black? And then my tongue turned black.
Whoa,
and
I
thought
did not know that.
The demon lived inside me. And anyways.
I went to Ukrainian Orthodox church camp, Camp Veselka, shout out. I went there for shout out to all the Camp Veselka alumni who are listening today. Best years of my life. It was the best part of my summer. I loved camp so much. I loved it so much. That's all I have to say. We're going to move on to my No Way. This one's mine.
Round two.
We're actually going to skip ahead here in the timeline of the movie. We're gonna go to the end because for reasons that you'll find out very soon. So we're going to go to the end to approximately 1 hour and 59 minutes right at the very end of this movie. It's after they have reunited the families. They're back together. The ruse is up. And they are leaving California. So they're going back to England. And they do. It's a sad goodbye. Very sad music is playing. They go back to England. Lo and behold, they get reunited. And it's a happy ending. Spoiler for anybody that's listening. So my No Way, we're going to watch it here. It's going to come in right at that point where they are leaving and now coming back together in London. Roll the clip.
What are you doing here?
It took us around 30 seconds after you guys left for us to realize we didn't want to lose you two again.
Okay, so after watching that, I think you can probably maybe guess what my No Way is. My No Way is that they didn't intercept them by car or even at the airport in California before traveling all the way to London just to get them back. So basically, she explained, Hallie, that after 30 seconds... they realized they didn't want to lose them. So by 30 seconds, that gives them till about the end of the driveway of that entire vineyard to decide, hey, we should go after them. So let's walk this through. They're like, let's go after them. Let's get in the car. Let's go to the airport. We will pass them on the way to the airport because we're both in cars and 30 seconds is not a lot of leeway. Then you're gonna get to the airport. Hey, guess what? You gotta get to the same terminal. So then you're both gonna go through international boarding and security, waving at each other, somehow staying separate, and then going to the same waiting area to go to London, getting on different planes and going all the way there just to say, we don't want you to leave. There's just no way that would happen. Why does it happen? Why couldn't they just intercept them in a car at the airport? The movie's over. Why did they go to London? There is no way they would do that. End of my spiel.
Okay. So, am I going first? So, everyone says, it took about 30 seconds. It's like, oh, whenever you've been in a conversation, you'll be like, oh, I was talking to my friend the other day. The other day was really about like 2 months ago when you were talking to that friend and referencing a story. So I do feel like that 30 seconds was kind of just like a little bit of showy-offy to like, you know, tell, like be like, it took a, like basically we had already decided that we didn't want you to leave us again. So I don't actually think that was a literal 30 seconds.
Okay. Okay.
I have that. Also, she's wearing a completely different outfit, so maybe they had to pack a little bag. Also, I know because we were talking about this as a No Way, and this was just a given that it's from Privilege. They're talking about Privilege. I had never really heard of the Concorde before I watched this movie, and I don't know how long that flight takes.
Hey, Mom. Did you know the Concorde gets you here in half the time?
But I'm like, maybe they're in Napa Valley. Maybe they had to drive to like LAX to get to London. And maybe he has like, I don't know, a private, I don't know.
He owns a vineyard. Like,
well,
like I'm with you.
I know. I'm kind of like, we were talking about Privilege. Yes. But like, maybe he's got his own pilot. Maybe he's got his own plane. Like, who
Chessie
knows?
Probably has her pilot's license.
Who knows? Exactly. So that's kind of my like rebuttal to that.
And you don't even have to own your own, you know, Concorde plane to book privately.
Right.
You can book a private jet without owning the jet.
Yes.
I'm hearing you. I'm hearing what your No Way is that if the goal is simply to intercept them, to say, stop. Don't go. I want you back. I want the family together. Then why didn't they just do that quicker? But I think that there is some justification in the character's motives here a little bit, in that Dennis Quaid's character is like, I gotta do this right. This has to be big. This has to be monumental. I can't just stop her in the airport. That's too cheesy. If I'm gonna do this, I gotta do this in a way that will be unforgettable to win her back for good. And I think that means let's go to London. Let's show that I want you back so badly that I don't want you back. I will go to you instead. And also, so two things. One, I'm on Shannon's side that they could just find their own fucking flight that doesn't even involve them passing through the same way as them. But I'm going to play your game here, which is that they have to go through the same international flight in the waiting room. You forget that Dennis's daughter is essentially a master of disguise and transforming her own things. And I think that through her expertise and training, they are disguised the entire time. I bet they could be on the same fucking flight even, and they wouldn't recognize them because they are trying to be incognito. They have mustache glasses on. They have
Mike's going down a real rabbit hole of conspiracy.
All I'm saying
here
is that
it's a stretch, Mike.
If the goal is just to get to London, if the goal is to
this
get
close
to London,
to QAnon, bud, it's getting real weird.
If the goal is to get to London to surprise them there.
Before you undermine this argument any further, I'm totally with you, and you said what I was thinking, which is gesture. It is romantic gesture. And that he needs to make a big one, because in the film, she looks him in the face and says, "Why didn't you stop me? Why didn't you come through before?
You didn't come after me."
So he's making a massive romantic gesture. I agree with you. He went, "We're going to go there and be there when they get there to show that this isn't some sort of rash in the moment. Hang on, maybe you shouldn't go. This is I went across the ocean to be here waiting to show you that I'm thinking about it. I've thought about it. I crossed an ocean thinking about it, and I'm still sure." Also, romantic gesture, they met crossing an ocean. So crossing an ocean is a gesture of their union.
It's their love language.
I didn't mean to do this with this movie. I thought I was going to be a very aggressive no-wayer. I think it's a way.
I was also going to say, they wouldn't be at the same terminal. One could be flying Delta. One could be flying Air Britain or whatever that airline is. So one could be in Terminal 3, one could be in Terminal 7. So you don't know where the Concords fly out of. So yeah, they might have had to have gone through security at the same time, but if we're talking about them actually making this decision and sitting down as a family and it actually taking more of like an hour or 45 minutes to really talk this out, and Chessie's probably like, "I'm coming too," and they're like, "Do we keep you on payroll, Chessie?" Like, there's a whole thing, you know what I mean? So, does that make me a no way? Does that make me a way?
That makes you a way.
I like the idea of you arguing such a way and then being like, "So it's absolutely a no way." We're
so, so no, I'm out.
I see two sides and I'm so easily swayed, and I could talk if one of my best friends murdered someone, I'd be like, "Listen, I get it. I understand you and I see that and I see
get it.
You.
They were twins. They needed to die."
Yeah, one had to die. Yeah.
Such a way on this, man. I'm a romantic at heart. All I do is big romantic gestures.
Okay.
I'm down.
Gosh. And Shannon?
I'm away.
Life finds a way.
Shannon, has anyone ever flown across the ocean for you?
I will cross the ocean for you. No. Do you know that song?
No.
No, but...
Anyways. No one has crossed the ocean. No.
Me neither. So.
Yet.
Me neither.
Yet for yet. Everybody.
Do we have listeners in Europe?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, we do. We have
if
a few.
If any of you are in love with me.
Now that's my kind of woman.
I've really surprised myself. I really thought with this one, because there's been other ones we've done where I've come in being like, "I'm here to defend the film." And this is one actually that I went in being like, "I'm pretty ready to rip this thing a new hole." But I'm the greatest advocate for the Parent Trap so far. I'm like,
you are. You've been way on both
so
of them.
Pro twin today.
So that puts us at the end of round two with one no way and one way, which means we're at a tie. So this third round will finalize and decide the fate. It's all on the line with the third one.
Round three.
My No Way, the scene that we're going to watch, comes in at 1 hour 37 minutes. It is the night of the yacht date that the girls organize without their parents' knowledge. And in the scene we're going to watch, we're going to see them have a glass of champagne and reminisce on their early days and how their relationship, what the reasons behind why it came to an end.
You don't remember the day you packed?
No, that day I remember perfectly. Did I hurt you when I threw that, what was it?
It was a hairdryer.
My No Way is unusually broad for this show, and so it's a bit of an experiment, but it involves kind of the genesis of this entire agreement between the parents and separating the children, and that the world around them, their people who are in their lives, the grandfather, Chessie, enabled this arrangement and agreement and have gone along with it. And it kind of, unfortunately, sort of, it's so broad because it affects every decision we see in The Parent Trap and why people are acting the way they're doing. And I'll be quite frank, I think they're actually the worst parents. They're very charming people, but like, they don't even remember why they broke up, but they separated twins without a second glance. Like, so my No Way is that I don't buy the entire arrangement and that those people in their lives accepted it without question.
Oh, sorry. Ignore me.
I'm going to also say I think that was a terrible parenting decision. Absolutely fucking terrible. To the point where it was like, oh, you threw a hairdryer at me. Well, and you didn't come after me. Well, we had already decided to split the kids up. It's like, what? Like, what do you mean? So like, what? You decided that you were going to leave the relationship and then you're like, I'm taking one twin, you're keeping the other. Goodbye. And it's like, there wasn't an actual sit down about this, or like there was a sit down and that they didn't come to this decision where it was like, well, why are we ending our marriage? Is it because...
Well, you know, that part's become a bit hazy to me, too, over the years.
You know, I'm kind of with you, Kayvon.
She also says, I jumped on my first 747, and she doesn't even mention she had, like, a crying baby with her that she's separating from her twin. Yeah. It's nuts. The entire thing is nuts. And what it does for me is it... Because they're such charming people, like Kayvon said, it undermines their characters and actually kind of this whole movie a bit, because it's pretty fucked up what they did. And it's part to, as an adult who knows how to, like, you know, I don't have kids, but I could imagine having one and having twins and then separating them. You just never do that. That's horrible. Yeah. It's like those experiments we were talking about in the intro. It's just like, well, what if we do just never tell these two that they're being separated? I think it's pretty fucked up, and I don't think it really happens. Maybe it does, but
You clearly have to be two of the most toxic human beings on earth that your resolution to your issues was, we'll separate kids and never tell them about the truth because we can't be in the same continent as each other because that's how violent it is. And then as soon as the girls started saying, let's get them back together, everybody in their life all went, well, we'll help you. Like, clearly, no, yeah, maybe grandfather, let's not keep let's keep them apart if it's that toxic and that dangerous. Yeah.
May I offer you both a taste of the bubbly? In the hope that you'll get a bit schnockered and not fire this lovely lady and myself.
Yeah. Like, Chessie goes along with it. Remember in that scene where she's just like, she finds out that it's Hallie, or that it's Annie, sorry. And then she's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, and then she continues to be like, I don't know a thing. I'm not involved. It's like, Chessie, you gotta talk to him. You like, it's up. The ruse is up. Like, let's be adults. Is anybody going to be adults in this movie about this situation in a real way?
Is their relationship so toxic that they can't even allow their children to know about one another? Not only are they, like, they're not even just siblings, they're twins, you know? And they shared a womb together. They're connected. And for them to not know about one another says, I mean, so much about their terrible parenting skills.
Do they know they're twins from birth?
You'd have to, yes.
You don't. Twins aren't. You don't give birth on Monday and then come back on a Thursday. It's
Doesn't actually affect what I was thinking about. But I was wondering for a second. Do you know they're twins from birth? Because, you know, maybe they didn't even know they were twins. But that clearly they do, because that's just how genetics work. So my thought is, these are two clear.
Wait a second. Are you away if they weren't twins, if they were like not identical.
I don't know. I was thinking pretty hard about something. I was like, do they even know they're twins? But okay, these two are clearly narcissists. Like they're like, they love their own careers. They love themselves. They're the center of their own world. I think a lot of times when parents divorce kids, they both want to be the sole person in charge of the child because they believe that they're going to be the better parent. I know how to raise this kid. You don't. That's why you're leaving this relationship. I don't like the things you do. I'm not letting my kid be around you. And in most circumstances, the child does have to be with both. In this case, they're in the rare case where they're like, I'm taking this fucking kid and I'm raising it the way I want to. And the other parent goes, no, you don't get both the kids. I'm taking one too. So they're both narcissists. They both want to raise the kids on their own so that they raise their kid right. Also, Chessie, the other people, they're fucking employees. They're paid to keep their goddamn mouths shut. And they don't like it. And that's why when they do get revealed that it's Hallie and Annie, they're like, fuck, like, I've never been able to even talk about it because I would talk about this.
Mike, you'd be the worst boss ever. Holy shit.
Shut the fuck up.
I'd be like, shut your fucking mouth. Don't ever talk about that other baby you saw once. There's no other baby. What other baby? No other baby. That's right, Chessie. That's now, learn how to fly a plane and make good soup. But like, I think that that's one of the reasons why there's such an emotional reaction from Chessie, because she is not allowed to bring this up. And then once the kids are there and the dam is broken, she revels in the fact that she can finally be like, the kids are already fucking here. Doesn't matter. You can pay me all you want to keep my mouth shut. The kid's in front of you. So let's talk about it. Let's bring it up now, you know?
You know about Annie?
I am Annie.
There's a bit of a way in it in terms of just money and narcissism. They're terrible people.
Why it clashes to me and why I was like, this is my no way, is what I think we all can diagnose, acknowledge, and observe is that these are narcissistic people who are incredibly toxic and had a very impetuous and rash relationship. Hedonists. And they had babies very quickly, and then they had a fight and they personally felt unhappy, and their resolution was, well, fuck it, I'm out of here. I don't really care about these kids. I'm just taking one, you take one. I don't want to talk to you again.
It ended so fast.
It started so fast.
They want to fuck. They want to take cruises. They want to drink wine.
Yeah. So they're, this whole thing's happening, and they have servants, and they tell them to shut the fuck up and don't mind your own business.
Yeah, they want to rule people.
Does that, what we just described, align with the entire presentation of the film about how those people are around those individuals?
Martin, you know that you're more than a butler to me. You're more like a lovable brother who just happens to wait on us. And
how those people behave when they're seeing each
other. It's been 11 years.
Even the way they talk about it, they're like, I don't even remember the fact.
Because they were drunk. Because they're hedonists.
They're
We were kids. We were so young.
Yeah, we were addicted to meth. It was a really weird time.
They're brushing it off in a really weird way. When this is an event you do not brush off or forget.
Because it's embarrassing. Because it's embarrassing that they have to admit they're wrong.
Mike, you said that was 11 years ago. You're saying there was a sort of, those are different people and these are more mature adults.
People change.
I'm just going to say one thing. Not once in this present day story do they apologize to anybody.
No, they're narcissists.
But
they're
what you're saying is that they've grown, that they've changed, that we're not seeing the people from 11 years ago.
I think they've grown in certain ways. But the thing is, again, nothing's really changed, because you know what they want in this moment? They always get what they want.
We both actually got where we wanted to go.
The rich narcissist hedonists, they want each other now. So that's why I still say
it doesn't line up with what we're being presented.
If they're still
the toxic people that we think they are, it doesn't line up.
It just doesn't come across to me now, Mike, as they're toxic, bad people. They come across as really sweet, empathetic, kind people.
Gotten babies or get dogs or like try to do all this shit because that's now like the cool thing to do. That's what society, they're like, you know, like, I want a baby so I can put on Instagram and dogs. They've changed. Now their wants are different, and their want is, I want people to think I have a successful, happy family. I want that image in my life. I've got the vineyard. I've already fucked that young, whatever the fuck her name is, that woman. She's like, I've already done my dresses.
Meredith.
They've got everything they want. Now what they want is that image that they're successful and happy in a beautiful family. Give me you back. Give me my child back.
It's a trap. They don't want. The whole fucking title of the movie is parent trap.
The kids are hedonists too. The kids are hedonists.
Jesus Christ. You are full QAnon, bud. You are full down the hole.
This is insane.
The kids gamble. The kids get whatever they want. And now the kids want two loving parents. Everybody just takes and takes.
Okay, Mike, are you away on this? You're away.
Absolute way.
I mean, I think there are terrible people out there. I think that there are terrible people out there. And I do think that, I mean, from even those stories, I'm so Canadian, stories that Kayvon was saying before, like people are separated at birth and then not talked about and used as experiments. That actually happens. So this could very well be a way. It could totally be.
Do you think, Shannon, I'll ask you a question. Do you think after this movie ends and they all live together, that it is happily ever after?
You know, I think there's some learning. I think there's some rocky patches. But I think, yes, I do know a couple of people who have gotten back together later in life or have been divorced and then gotten back together and made it work. I think that could absolutely work. And I think, you know, I think the fact that they share children, they would make it even more of a priority to make it work. So
I think this family fucking implodes like a year after they do this because they're just impulsive.
Could this happen in real life? Of course it can. Can people be this shitty? Of course they can. This can happen. So yes, there is a way. But now we're trying to connect the dots of do these two people presented in the movie and the people around them, would they do this? Mm-hmm. For me, it is staying a no way. Simply because I don't know what happened 11 years ago other than the information that they were given. Mm-hmm. We were given as an audience, which is that conversation we just watched. Based on what I just heard, they weren't even that. For me, it would take really terrible, mean people to do that to twins. Mm-hmm. It would be really, really shitty people. And that is not who I see in this movie. It's a no way.
Dennis Quaid is Dionysus.
I'm going to have to agree only because of the way that the parents are displayed, depicted in this film. They do not, they seem like wholesome, moral, good, loving parents. And I know narcissism.
We are not watching the same
movie. I understand that.
Their narcissists, Mike, doesn't make them terrible people.
For sure. They're exactly.
They're regularly drunk.
I think, you know, guys, I think I'm a no way. I just don't think, the way that these two were shown in this movie and how they hold their family so close to their heart and their grandfather lives with them and they treat their, you know, help as a family, which a lot of people do, which is great. But I just don't think, I just think it's a no way.
No way.
The Parent Trap is a no way.
No way.
It went one way out of three possibles, two out of three no ways. So fortunately, unfortunately, Parent Trap did not pass our test. But tests aside, Markian's next last category is the real reason we watch movies.
It's the funometer, Shannon. So out of 100, how much did you enjoy this movie as an adult watching it? I still really, really love this movie because my nostalgia is so connected to it. And I love the soundtrack. I love Lindsay Lohan in it. It's just a really fun movie for me. And it still has been, always will be, with my sister. This is our movie. It's a 90 for me.
When I watched the movie, I hadn't seen it before. I don't remember seeing it as a child. And honestly, I didn't really enjoy it. I'd give it like a 50 out of 100. But then after talking about it and deciding that I kind of love these horrible fucking succubus people, these Greek gods of fertility and wine, all over this fucking gamble and drink wine. I love them now. It's a 85 out of 100 now. I want to watch it again under that perspective.
Fuck is going on over
there,
bud?
Oh my god.
Are you on Zoomers? What's going on tonight?
Yeah, what is happening?
I love what I've discovered about this movie.
It was good. You're right. Lindsay Lohan is a fantastic performer. And for a first feature film performance, it's extraordinary. It's a big ask. She did a great job. There's lots of fun stuff in here. 65 for me.
I am going to say, rewatching it as an adult, I've watched it a few times as an adult, and is it as amazing as it was when I was a kid? No, but the nostalgia. Okay, so quickly, my first one that I wanted to do was Father of the Bride 2. I rewatched that. That didn't hold up the way that this movie holds up. So, and I had such nostalgia with the Father of the Bride. So we're also making a Father of the Bride 3 with Andy Garcia. But this movie holds up. The music, the cheesiness. I'm like still like I was watching Lindsay Lohan like making these choices from two different perspectives, and I think she did a fucking incredible job at 11 years old, and it she holds does. Up for me. Yeah. I am giving it a 92.
That was a great flight, wasn't it? I mean, it was so quick.
Shannon, that brings us to our end. Thank you so much for bringing this movie
thank
to
you.
Us. Thank you for being here, and thank you for your time talking this ridiculousness with us. It was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shannon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the No Way podcast. No Way is produced by Markian Tarasiak, Kayvon Koshkam, and Mike Gill with the help of Speakeasy Theater and the Cinematics Creation Company. The show is edited by Kayvon Koshkam with original music by Ben Elliott. The No Way podcast is produced on the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. Please join us next Friday for another exciting episode of No Way, and make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at No Way Podcast and Twitter at No Way Pod. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time at the movies.